Tonight, deadly attack. Another case of a vehicle used as a weapon. This time, targeting people at a popular bar in Germany. What we know about the driver. Teen tragedy. Canada is in mourning after a horrific crash involving a junior hockey team. On guard, hundreds of National Guard troops heading to the U.S.-Mexico border. Reinforcements in the president's push to tighten security. The gun debate. Less than 2 months since the Florida massacre. Town halls across the country today, while back at the scene of that tragedy, students creating their yearbook are grappling with a daunting and draining task. And island strength, some remarkable resilience on display in a place hammered by hurricanes, the U.S. Virgin Islands.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. It has happened again, a vehicle plowing into pedestrians, this time in the German city of Münster, on one of the first nice days of spring. The driver of a van smashed through the terrace of a restaurant. Police say at least two people were killed, many more injured. Law enforcement officials say they don't know why the man launched this attack and then took his own life. Tonight, they're interviewing eyewitnesses. NBC's Lucy Kavanoff has the late-breaking details.
In Germany tonight, an investigation into another deadly vehicle attack. The city of Münster's historic downtown, now a crime scene, after the van plowed into a crowd at an outdoor restaurant this afternoon. Police say two people were killed, 20 injured. The driver then shot and killed himself while still inside the van. The attacker, described by German officials as a middle-aged man with psychological issues. His motive, unclear. It's the latest in a string of attacks where vehicles were the weapon. In Berlin, 12 people died in 2016 after a man who pledged allegiance to ISIS drove a truck into a crowded Christmas market. There was Bastille Day in Nice, attacks in Stockholm, Barcelona, London, and New York. In each, terrorists using a vehicle with deadly impact.
You can get hold of it incredibly easy, incredibly quickly, and it's incredibly effective to use. And once you've seen one person use it, other people copy.
Last summer in Charlottesville, Virginia, a man plowed his car into a crowd of counter-protesters at a white nationalist rally, killing one woman, injuring dozens. German officials say there's no indication of an Islamic extremist motive in this attack, but they're investigating all possibilities. Lucy Kafanov, NBC News.
Now to a horrible accident that has really shaken Canada. In a country where hockey is a way of life, young players who were chasing their dreams are among those who died when a junior hockey team's bus collided with a tractor trailer. Tonight, as the nation mourns, we're learning about some of the lives cut short. NBC's Ron Mott has that story from Saskatchewan.
Canadian officials say the Humboldt Broncos junior hockey team from Saskatchewan was on the way to a game Friday when their bus was broadsided by a semi, killing at least 15.
The worst nightmare has happened.
Authorities say the team, with players ranging in age from 16 to 21, was scheduled to play in Nipawin and was near the town of Tisdale when the accident happened. The bus slammed onto its side. Among the dead, the team's head coach, Darcy Hogan, his sister confirming to NBC News. This player's mother says her son survived the tragedy but suffered a spinal injury.
We're just so thankful and just devastated.
Families gathered at the team's arena complex for information, for support. Shocking news to a small town of 5,800.
We continue to investigate this collision and have deployed the appropriate resources and specialized investigators, including a collision reconstructionist team.
Teams like the Broncos often travel great distances to games by van or bus. Inclement winter weather, a routine challenge during the season, though officials have not indicated what caused the crash. It's a blow to Canada's passionate and tight-knit hockey community. Condolences coming from around the nation and beyond, including Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as well as NHL teams stunned by the sudden loss of life.
You can't make up for loss. You just can't. It's got to rip the heart out of your chest. We pray for those families and thinking about them.
Tonight, a simple request, prayers for a heartbroken town.
We're told 29 people in all were on the bus. 14 were injured. The driver of the semi-truck escaped unharmed. There has been an outpouring of support for this community tonight. Around the NHL, the team will be remembered, and hotels here have opened their doors to families that have been affected. Kate?
Ron Mott up in Saskatchewan tonight. Ron, thank you. President Trump today again pushed for increased security along the U.S.-Mexico border, tweeting, "We are sealing up the southern border," and slamming Democrats as a, quote, disaster on this issue. That as several hundred National Guard troops began deploying to the region after the Pentagon this week called for up to 4,000 to go there eventually. NBC's Maya Rodriguez is down on the border tonight and has our report.
Tonight, National Guard troops are heading to the border.
The Texas National Guard is preparing to immediately deploy with supporting aircraft, vehicles, and equipment to the Texas-Mexico border.
For what could be a several months long deployment to Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Texas. The move approved by the Secretary of Defense late last night. It was championed by President Trump.
Until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military.
But at Catholic Charities in McAllen, Texas, Sister Norma Pimentel, who helps undocumented migrants who cross the border, has reservations.
Well, I'm concerned. It's a concern because I don't know that militarization of our community is the answer.
This comes amid a sharp increase in illegal border crossings, up 203% since this time last year. Previous presidents have deployed the Guard to the border, including 1,200 National Guard sent by President Obama in 2010. Today in Mexico City, an annual group of hundreds of migrants that had been heading to the border stopped their journey. One of the organizers saying, "No one here is worried about the National Guard. It's a circus. He, Donald Trump, turns everything into a circus." The migrants saying the president used their journey to justify sending the Guard to the border. Now many in this border town wondering what will happen next.
We can't overlook the human aspect of what is happening and why they're having to flee their country.
Republican-led states like Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas welcome the move. California's Democratic governor remains noncommittal. Now, the National Guard will be deployed through September, but where exactly along the border is not clear. Kate?
Maya Rodriguez, thank you. Across the country today, young people are again pressuring lawmakers to end gun violence, this time in an effort they're calling Town Hall for Our Lives. Survivors of the mass shooting in Parkland, Florida, are attending many of these nationwide events. NBC's Blake McCoy has the story from one of the meetings here in New York.
March for Our Lives took demands for stricter gun control to the streets, led by determined young people.
If you don't stand with us, you are against us.
Now, 2 weeks later, they're taking Town Hall for Our Lives to lawmakers. In more than 100 cities across the country, like Sterling, Virginia, near the ball field where several people were shot and wounded during a congressional softball practice last year.
The fact that our safety is up for debate is frustrating and sad.
In Chicago, long plagued by gun violence with nearly 2,800 shootings last year.
We see mass shootings, but we also see gun violence in Chicago every single day.
And Broward County, Florida, home to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where 17 were shot and killed in February.
I am tired of marching, I'm tired of protesting, and I'm tired of holding up a sign to say stop killing our children.
One of those student survivors on hand for this town hall on Staten Island, New York.
What do you hope your presence here does today?
I'm hoping today it just shows that I stand in solidarity with Staten Island as they stand in solidarity with Parkland.
I am aggravated, I'm frustrated, and I'm scared, and I will not be silenced.
Today's town hall is an effort to move the gun control debate forward to the elections this November. Republicans were largely expected to skip the town halls, like in Janesville, Wisconsin, hometown of Speaker Paul Ryan, who has an A-plus rating from the NRA. Empty chairs symbolized those invited, but who did not show up.
Here on Staten Island, it's a packed house. The Republican congressman here did not show up, but all of his opponents did. The event is doubling as a voter registration drive. Kate?
Blake McCoy, thank you. And while a lot of young people from Parkland, Florida have been in the spotlight speaking out against gun violence, they are also still students getting ready for proms and finals and graduation, another rite of passage, yearbooks. And for the yearbook committee at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, putting together this year's Chronicle has been an emotional seesaw, balancing mention of the tragedy with memories of their loved ones. NBC's Carrie Sanders brings us that story.
Check the captions, Doc.
In a cramped classroom,
all my spreads are done.
The yearbook staff at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas wrestles with still raw emotions.
There have been moments where, like, you need to, like, step back for a couple seconds. Something happens and you just need to, like, push the computer away.
It's not easy for anyone, much less teenagers, to memorialize in a keepsake like a yearbook 17 individuals, friends murdered on campus, victims of gun violence. It's never really happened before.
Columbine, it was too late in the year. Sandy Hook was elementary students. Virginia Tech, I mean, it's a college, doesn't really have a yearbook.
The horror there on Valentine's Day began with so much love, documented by the yearbook staff. Photos of the love that morning will be in the yearbook, as will photos Kira Parrow took earlier in the year of those who died. Like Nicholas Dworet, Kira's friend since seventh grade.
You know, like, he looks so happy in that picture, and even after the fact, his family reached out to me and they said, thank you so much for that photo. Like, it's brought so much light to their family. I broke down crying when I read that message from his dad.
I'm just fixing this mod.
452 pages, 40 more than usual. But students and their advisors say they will not let the carnage define so many of their school's bright spots.
We want to honor those we lost, but we're all survivors, so we need to tell the survivor story too.
Is there anybody that will not be mentioned in this yearbook?
We will not be mentioning the shooter. It's just not even a question. It's a firm no.
And everybody agreed with that?
Yes, of course.
High school yearbooks, time capsules of happy days. Now in Parkland, also a tribute to how the memories of 17 lives are making a difference in the world. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Parkland, Florida.
Millions of people hoping to finally put away their heavy coats and boots are going to have to wait a little longer. Winter's grip is holding on across much of the country. Meteorologist Dylan Dreyer has a look at when we can expect some signs of spring. Dylan?
Good evening, Kate. After record-breaking cold temperatures this morning, it is going to be just as cold as we go into Sunday, with the cold air surging down from the north. Highs on Sunday will be in the 30s and some 40s, 50s down through Memphis. Charlotte, 59 degrees for a high on Sunday. We will slowly start to warm things up, but mostly back through the south. I mean, by Wednesday, Dallas gets up to 80. Memphis, it takes till Wednesday to get up to 70. But for most areas across the northern tier, we'll be stuck in the 30s and 40s, although Kansas City should get up to 70 by Wednesday. Another round of snow moving through the Midwest as we go into Monday. It approaches the Great Lakes by Monday night. Snowfall accumulations could be as high as about 4 to 6 inches, especially across North Dakota and some of that stretching into the Midwest. Kate?
All right, Dylan, thank you. There is breaking news at Trump Tower in Manhattan tonight, where firefighters battled a fire in a 50th floor apartment. They say one person was seriously injured. From the street below, people watched flames shoot from the building. The president, First Lady, and Barron Trump are all in Washington this weekend. Tonight, the president tweeted that the fire is now out and was confined. It's not clear what started this fire. Back overseas now to what some call an open secret, dirty Russian money being used to buy up posh properties in London. For years, it's gone unchecked, but now a spotlight is shining on some individuals who might prefer to remain in the shadows, all because of the icy relationship between Russia and the UK. NBC's Tammy Leitner has the details.
London, a playground for Russia's wealthy elite. Palatial homes, fancy cars, expensive shops. And critics say an ideal place for those close to Russian President Vladimir Putin to launder money.
I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
An underground world that inspired this British crime drama.
You're a gangster.
Close.
Banker.
And a popular London tour.
What the Russian regime has done is it's found the soft underbelly of British society.
For years, London's dirty little secret has been quietly accepted. Until now.
There is no place for these people or their money in our country.
The calls to crack down came after a former Russian spy and his daughter were poisoned on British soil. British officials pointed the finger at Russia. And now lawmakers are considering travel bans, asset freezes, and forcing some rich Russians to explain their wealth.
This does feel like a kind of turning point. This hasn't happened before.
But getting tough may be difficult. The wealthiest Russians are connected and part of the fabric of British society.
Why is it so common for Russians to park their money here in Britain?
You can buy a beautiful property in the UK secretly, like anonymously, without having to tell the law enforcement who you really are.
One high-ranking Russian government official owns an apartment overlooking the River Thames.
Can he afford this on his salary?
Absolutely not. I mean, his stated salary is just over £100,000, and these properties are around £12 million.
By one estimate, $130 billion in hidden money flowed into the UK over a decade, much of it suspected to be from Russia. Experts say by cutting off the money, it would hit those connected to Vladimir Putin where it hurts, their wallets. Tammy Leitner, NBC News, London.
Still ahead tonight, the drilling debate. The White House opening up shorelines for new oil rigs with one notable exception. Some critics say the president is playing favorites.
I'm Stephanie Stanton in Los Angeles with breaking news out of New York City. A fire in Trump Tower claims the life of one man and injures four firefighters. It broke out this evening inside a residence on the 50th floor. The president, first lady, and son Barron were not home. They are in Washington, D.C. Now, officials say an occupant of the unit died while firefighters suffered non-life-threatening injuries. President Trump took to Twitter to say the fire was out and to thank firefighters. No word on how it started. Now back to Kate Snow in New York.
When President Trump announced plans to expand offshore oil drilling back in January, many were upset, especially in states like California, where they've experienced environmental disasters. The anger only grew when the president's interior secretary said Florida would be exempt from the new rules. But the White House says the system did not favor one state over others. NBC's Matt Bradley has more on that story tonight.
The coast of California has wildlife, sweeping vistas and oil.
The oil rigs in the channels were a bit of a shock.
Tourists may be seeing a lot more. A proposal from the Trump administration would open about 90% of America's coast to new drilling, with only one exemption, Florida.
These waters off the coast of Santa Barbara are rich with oil, but they also boast protected wildlife and a huge tourism industry. And that has Californians wondering, if Florida's exempt, why aren't we?
There was no day in court here for the American public, certainly no day in court for California. There's no consistency when the secretary says, oh, except Florida, you're okay.
Former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger tweeting, don't touch California. If you want to drill, do it off Mar-a-Lago. The Interior Department denied playing favorites and said Florida's exemption isn't final. But for Californians, the debate brings back memories of oil spills past, like this one off Santa Barbara in 2015 that dumped nearly 150,000 gallons of crude, and a much larger one in 1969. Which species are most vulnerable?
I would say the common dolphin, sea lions, fish.
Oil advocates say new wells could bring in billions.
The American people and the people of California have an opportunity to stop buying that foreign oil and instead buy oil produced in California by Californians.
But coastal governors of both parties are still angry. Almost all pledged to resist. Many see an America First policy that puts the environment last. Matt Bradley, NBC News, Santa Barbara, California.
We're back in a moment with a special message after a miracle rescue. A teenager thanks the first responders who saved him. A heartfelt thank you from a 13-year-old who survived a long fall and a scary night inside the Los Angeles sewer system. Jesse Hernandez met some of the first responders who rescued him. You might remember on Easter Sunday, the teen plunged 25 feet into a sewer pipe while he was playing with other kids in a park. Then a river of sewage swept him away. Firefighters used cameras to scour a labyrinth of pipes. 12 hours later and a half mile away, they found him. Jesse says now he's a little scratched up, but otherwise okay. Battered, but not broken. Even people in paradise need a helping hand sometimes. A fresh look at an impressive recovery in the Caribbean. Finally tonight, it took an outpouring of support and, more importantly, a lot of hard work. But a hurricane-ravaged community is bouncing back from a devastating storm season. NBC's Stephanie Ruhle has our story on the little island that could.
Hurricanes Irma and Maria pummeled the United States last season, leaving billions in damage. But for the small U.S. Virgin Islands, the damage was especially rough. Devastation I saw firsthand during my reporting last fall.
It truly looks like a war zone.
Now, good news. The islands are on the fast track to recovery.
I was on this spot 7 months ago. This beach was a boat graveyard. Now, thanks to hundreds of volunteers and a whole lot of love, it is almost back to normal.
The secret? Volunteer organizations and foundations swooping in to provide critical relief and supplies.
I think that we all just wanted a way to help out and to give more than just money. We want to give time.
All Hands and Hearts is made up of hundreds of volunteers lending a hand to an island in need. During my visit, one of the most striking things my crew and I noticed, the love and gratitude from residents to the hundreds of volunteers.
It was just amazing. We would not be where we are today because they needed, we needed people like you.
The tourists are back and enjoying the beautiful beaches, scenery, and people of the Virgin Islands.
What's the real secret to recovery?
Have love in your heart. As long as you got love and God in your heart, everything is possible.
Stephanie Rule, NBC News, U.S. Virgin Islands.
That's some great news. That is NBC Nightly News for this Saturday night. Tomorrow night, we'll introduce you to a celebrity chef trying to do what might sound impossible, performing surgery on the hospital menu. I'm Kate Snow. From all of us, thanks so much for watching. We leave you with a look at the beautiful cherry blossoms in peak bloom now in Washington, D.C. Have a great night.